Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Monday afternoon, the 21st of June. I'm Todd Wilkin. Jeannie Monahan joins us from the Family Research Council to talk a little bit about the approval of the five-day morning after pill by an FDA advisory panel. It seems as though the period of time is getting longer and longer. It's hard to call this morning after when it's five days or mornings after. Jeannie, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Nice to be here.
Someone says, look, it's 5 days. I mean, what can happen in 5 days? You're still preventing a pregnancy. This is emergency contraception, and no lives, no matter how small or nascent, are in danger. What's your response?
Well, I would have two responses. The first would be that one of the modes of action of this drug is that after a baby has been fertilized, so that could be immediately following a sexual act up through a few days, before it is implanted, which could be 7 to 10 days after the actual act, this could actually hurt the baby or kill it in that process. But what we're really nervous about is the off-label use, the potential for off-label use of this drug. So once a baby has actually been implanted in its mother's womb and it's attached, you know, to the lining of the uterus, so to speak, the drug could also work then. And that would, of course, be after 5 days.
So this can be... There's no way to ensure that this won't be used 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month later.
Correct. And we know right now you could get on Planned Parenthood's website and you can see that they prescribe both RU486, which is the one legal abortion pill in the United States. They prescribe that with off-label use. In other words, in ways that the FDA has not approved it. They also prescribe Plan B, which is levonorgestrel, which is approved by the FDA. It's the one of the two morning after pills that's available right now. They approve or they suggest using that with off-label use as well. So we, you know, there's a lot of precedent here for off-label use.
What is the difference between the morning after pill, as it's been called up to this point, and what's just been approved by the FDA advisory panel?
Great question. The morning after pill is classified as a progestogen, and the way in which it works is primarily preventing ovulation, but then also it can work after an embryo has been fertilized and before it implants. So it can act as an abortifacient in that way. However, once a baby has been implanted, it cannot destroy the baby at that point. Now, RU486, or this drug that we're talking... Okay, sorry, RU486 is the one legal abortion pill in the United States, and it has an almost identical chemical compound to Ella, which is the drug that's being considered by the FDA right now. Those are both in the category of what we call an SPRM, selected progesterone receptor modulator, and kind of the long story short about that is that it messes around with progesterone, and in doing so can actually change sort of the lining of the uterus once the baby's been implanted, and it can also essentially affect the placenta so that the baby is no longer receiving the necessary progesterone that it needs. Up until 10 weeks of development, the baby needs progesterone. So it in effect starves the baby of the necessary progesterone and thereby kills it.
All right. All of these drugs, but particularly the one that's being considered by the advisory panel, the concern I always have is harm also to women, and in particular, girls, because often these things fall into the hands of, you can't call them anything other than girls.
Right. Great point. And studies are, nothing's been done on girls that we know of with this drug, to tell you the truth. So we have no clue right now what's happening as far as that is concerned. But to get to your question about the effects on women's health, RU486, again, which is an almost identical chemical compound in SPRM, along with Ella, impedes a woman's immune system. So we know that RU486 was approved in 2000, and only 6 short years after that, over 1,000 adverse event reports had been turned into the FDA, including 6 deaths. 6 deaths and over 100 blood transfusion, over 100 life-threatening illnesses. So what this does is it suppresses the immune system and can allow for profuse bleeding and a greater affability to infection. And so because these are of the same chemical compound, we fear that Ella will have the same health side effects.
Has Ella been approved, or is it simply being considered pending approval?
It's being considered for approval. The advisory panel on Thursday had essentially no major concerns. That was sort of their input to the FDA. And it has happened in the past where the FDA hasn't taken the advice of the advisory panel. And in sort of the normal course of events, the advisory panels usually meet a month or 2 months before FDA approves the drug. So this has been under consideration for a long time. It is approved in the UK. And it's been marketed to over 22 countries in Europe, and that was as of last September. But the FDA, we believe the FDA is in its final approval process for this drug.
What do we know about the FDA in terms of, it seems as though there's very little standing in the way of approval of these drugs. What do we know about the FDA itself?
Well, that's a really good question. I actually worked for the Department of Health and Human Services for a period of time and didn't actually work for the FDA, but I think that there are a lot of good-hearted people who are really doing their job there. I think it's hard to sort of generalize everything, you know, into a sentence or two, but what we've seen both with Plan B and with RU486 is a lot of politics. It's not necessarily looking at the science, and so what we're really asking for here at Family Research Council is that the Obama administration and its political appointments over at the FDA would be true to their promise of transparency and putting science first and openness, especially with regard to this drug, because as of right now, it doesn't look like there will be anything on the labeling that would mention that this could have an abortifacient effect. That's really important to us because women want to know what drugs are doing to their body, and the difference between preventing and destroying life is hugely significant, and women need to know that.
How is RU486, morning after pills, and then at some point this going to be available to women or girls?
Well, so the morning after pill right now is available over the counter. It was first available only via prescription, and normally in the course of events, the FDA would look at drugs first and primarily as prescription drugs, not over-the-counter drugs. RU486 is only available, so again, RU486 being the only abortion pill available in the United States, it's only available through a doctor, and because it's so dangerous, the doctor needs to have sort of special training in blood transfusions. They need to be in close proximity to a hospital. There have to be sort of all of these stipulations in place for the doctor to be able to prescribe this pill because it's hard on women. It's dangerous for women. So Ella right now is being considered only through prescription. We would think that it would be prescription first, and then like the Plan B, that it would be 5 years later they'd be looking at doing this over the counter. But that's just our guess.
But you have said that RU486 and this drug have a very similar chemical action. Should we be concerned about the same kind of safeguards that are put in place when this is prescribed?
Absolutely, and that's what we're asking for from the FDA right now, but they're not taking this seriously. So, yeah, at least that was my impression listening to that panel on Thursday. They voted that absolutely no extra labeling should take, or to at least advise the panel that there should be no extra labeling, having to do with both the abortifacient capacity of this drug as well as any potential health side effects.
Why? Because wouldn't you err on the side of caution? I've read enough labels heck, you can read an aspirin label and there are warnings there, replete with warnings. Why not err on the side of caution? And, you can pull one of those fold-out labels. They got them on Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah, the why is a great question, and I wish I could wrap my head around the answer to it, and I can't answer it, but here was sort of my take on Thursday in the advisory panel. This drug acts very well. It's very efficacious in terms of preventing ovulation and preventing fertilization. And so it was like the spotlight was on that specific mode of action on Thursday. They talked all about it, and it was really interesting, and apparently it works really well, and this, that, and the other. What wasn't talked about to me was the elephant in the room. It was the abortifacient qualities and the other modes of action of this drug, which, as far as we know, are at least three, but the ones that I mentioned right in the beginning. And so it was basically ignored. Now, I had to step out a few times, but while I was sitting there, it was basically ignored. I never actually heard the word mentioned. My colleague told me it was mentioned while I was gone. But the elephant in the room to me was what wasn't discussed on Thursday. Why? I don't know why.
Jeannie Monahan is director of the Center for Human Dignity for the Family Research Council based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to the Family Research Council under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jeannie, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, Deaconess Pam Nielsen is going to join us, as she always does, early in the week, every week. We'll be talking today about it's an interesting little, almost a quaint story from the Old Testament, God answering a prayer of Gideon with something as simple as the morning dew. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it isn't. And apparently, according to the story, Gideon takes a little bit of convincing. We'll find out what this story is all about. Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House will be our guest. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Wade Horn will join us. We'll talk about the importance of fathers coming off this Father's Day weekend. And then, very interesting interview with Brian McLaren. We're going to play part of it for you in the second hour of the program. And then we want your reaction in the last 10 minutes or so, talking about the emergent church movement with one of that movement's brightest lights and leaders, Brian McLaren. He's authored a new book, Calling for a New Kind of Christianity, outlining 10 questions that he says is transforming the Christian faith. We'll be right back.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Mondays, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for Teaching a Sunday School Lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels has been frequently mentioned as a potential presidential candidate in 2012. He's got a rock-solid reputation as being fiscally conservative and controlling government expenses in his state. But during a recent interview with the Weekly Standard, Governor Daniels said as president, he would have to call a truce on the so-called social issues. According to him, the plight of America's unborn babies would be put on hold until he dealt with economic issues. If Mr. Daniels isn't any good at multitasking, he has no business even considering a run for the White House. Every day, over 3,000 babies are killed in abortion chambers throughout the nation. I'd never consider a candidate who didn't understand the urgency of the abortion issue.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.